138, Spencer said. And when Professor Harding had her work done here, the only connections to her real name are my own office records and the... what did you call the thing you signed?
Power of attorney.
Yes, that's buried in a law office's files. And even so, there shouldn't be anything connecting it with this clinic.
I wouldn't get too complacent, Julian said. If Blaisdell wants to, he can find us the same way she did. We left some kind of a trail. The Mexican police could probably place us in Guadalajara, maybe even right here, and they could be bribed pretty easily. Begging your pardon, Dr. Spencer? He shrugged.
Es verdad.
So we suspect anyone who comes through that door. But what about Amelia? Blaze, is she nearby?
Maybe a quarter of a mile, Jefferson said. I'll take you there.
No, they might be following either of us. Let's not double their odds. Just write down the name of the place. I'll take two cabs.
Do you want to surprise her?
What does that mean? She's staying with someone?
No. Yeah, but it's Ellie Morgan. Nothing to get all bothered about.
Who's bothered? It was just a question.
All I meant was, should I call and say you're coming?
Sorry, I'm in a state. Go ahead and give her a... Wait, no, the phone might be tapped.
Not possible, Spencer said.
Humor me?
He looked at the address Jefferson had written down. Good, I'll take a cab to the Mercado, lose myself in the crowd, and then dive into the subway.
Your caution verges on paranoia, Spencer said.
Verges? I'm well over the edge, actually. Wouldn't you be paranoid if one of your best friends just ripped out half your life, and some Pentagon general is sending assassins down after your lover?
It's like they say, Jefferson said. Just because you're paranoid doesn't mean there isn't someone after you.
Having said I was going to the market, instead I took a cab out to T-Town, and then the subway back into the city. No such thing as being too careful. I slipped from a side street into the courtyard of Amelia's motel. Ellie Morgan answered the door.
She's asleep, she said in a half whisper. But I know she'd want to be woken up.
They had adjoining rooms. I went through and she eased the door closed behind me. Amelia was warm and soft from sleep, and smelled of lavender from the bath salts she liked.
Marty told me what happened, she said. It must be horrible, like losing one of your senses.
I couldn't answer that. I just held her close for a moment longer.
You know about the woman and Ray?
She stammered. I've been there, I spoke to her.
The doctor was going to jack her.
They did that, a high-risk speed installation. She's Hammer of God, same cell as Ingram. I told her about the general and the Pentagon. I don't think you're safe here. Nowhere in Guadalajara. She traced us from St. Bart's right to the clinic door through low-orbit spy satellites.
Our country uses satellites to spy on its own people?
Well, the satellites go all around the world. They just don't bother to turn them off over the U.S. There was a coffee machine set into the wall. I kept talking while I set it up. I don't think this Blaisdell knows exactly where we are. Otherwise, we probably would have had a SWAT team instead of a lone assassin, or at least a team backing her up.
Did the satellites actually see us as individuals, or just the bus?
The bus and the truck.
So I could walk out of here and go to the train station, and just slip away to some random part of Mexico?
I don't know. She had a picture of you. So we have to assume that Blaisdell can give a copy to the next hitman. They might be able to bribe someone, and you'd have every policeman in Mexico looking for you.
Nice to feel wanted.
Maybe you should come back to Portobello with me. Hole up in Building 31 until it's safe. Marty can have orders cut for you, probably with a couple of hours' notice.
That's good.
She stretched and yawned.
I just have a few hours to go on this proof. I'd like to have you go over it, then we can send it out through an airport phone just before we leave.
Good. It'll be a relief to do some physics for a change. Amelia had written a good, concise argument. I added a long footnote about the appropriateness of pseudo-operator theory in this regime. I also read Ellie's version for the popular press. To me it seemed unconvincing. No math. But I supposed it would be best to bow to her expertise and keep my mouth shut. Ellie had intuited my unease, though, and had remarked that not using mathematics was like writing about religion without mentioning God. But editors believed that 90% of their readers would quit at the first equation. I had called Marty. He was in surgery, but an assistant called back and said that orders would be waiting for Amelia at the gate. He also passed along the unsurprising news that Lieutenant Thurman was not going to be among the humanized. We'd hoped that the peaceful mental environment, being jacked with people from my converted platoon, would eliminate the stress that was causing his migraines, but no, they just came on later and stronger. So, like me, he'd have to sit this one out. Unlike me, he was virtually under house arrest, since the few minutes he did spend jacked were enough for him to learn far too much. I looked forward to talking to him, since we were no longer bureaucrat and flunky. We suddenly had a lot in common. Involuntary ex-mechanics. I also suddenly had a lot more in common with Amelia. If there was any advantage in my losing the ability to be jacked, that was it. It erased the main barrier between us. Cripples together, from my point of view, but together, nonetheless. It felt so good working with her, just being in the same room with her. It was hard for me to believe that the day before, I'd been ready to take the pill. Well, it wasn't me anymore. I supposed I could put off finding out who I was until after September 14th. By then, it might be immaterial. I might be immaterial. A plasma, anyhow. While Amelia was packing her small bag, I called the airport for the flight number and verified that they had payphones with long-distance data links. But then I realized that if Amelia had orders waiting down in Portobello, we could probably deadhead down in a military flight. I called Dorso Field, and sure enough, Amelia was Captain Blaze Harding. There was a flight leaving in 90 minutes. A cargo flyboy, with plenty of room, if we didn't mind sitting on benches.
"I don't know," Amelia said. "Since I outrank you, I should get to sit on your lap."
The cab made good time. Amelia uploaded 12 copies of the proof, along with personal messages to trusted friends, and then posted copies on the public domain physics and math nets. She put Ellie's version on both popular science and general news, and then we ran for the flyboy. Rushing off to the airbase rather than waiting in the motel for the next commercial flight probably saved their lives. A half hour after they left, Ellie answered a knock on the door to Amelia's adjoining room. Through the peephole, she saw a Mexican maid, apron and broom, pretty, with long black hair, in ringlets. She opened the door.
"I don't speak Spanish."
The end of the broom handle plunged into her solar plexus, and she staggered backwards, crashing to the floor in a ball.
"Neither do I, Satan."
The woman lifted her easily and threw her into a chair.
"Don't make a sound or I'll kill you."
She pulled a roll of duct tape out of the apron pocket and wound it around the woman's wrists, and then wound a tight loop twice around her chest and the chair back. She tore off a small piece and smoothed it over Ellie's mouth. She shrugged off the apron. Ellie gasped through her nose when she saw the hospital blues underneath. streaked with blood. Clothes. She ripped off the blood-stained pajamas. She pivoted, tense muscular voluptuousness, and saw Ellie's suitcase through the open double door.
Ah!
She walked through the door and came back with jeans and a cotton shirt.
They're a little baggy, but they'll do.
She folded them neatly on the end of the bed and peeled away enough of the tape so that Ellie could speak.
"You're not getting dressed," Ellie said, "because you don't want to get blood on your clothes. My blood on my clothes. Maybe I want to excite you. I think you're a lesbian living here alone with Blaze Harding."
"Sure. Where is she?"
"I don't know."
"Of course you do. Do I have to hurt you?"
"I'm not telling you anything."
Her voice shook and she swallowed.
"You're going to kill me no matter what."
"Why do you think that?"
"Because I can identify you."
She smiled indulgently.
"I just killed 2 guards and escaped from the high-security area of your clinic. 1,000 police know what I look like. I can let you live."
She bent to the floor in a gymnast's sweep and took a glittering scalpel from the apron pocket.
"You know what this is?"
Ellie nodded and swallowed.
"Now, I solemnly swear that I will not kill you if you answer my questions truthfully."
"Do you swear to God?"
"No, that's blasphemy."
She hefted the scalpel and stared at it.
"In fact, though, I won't even kill you if you tell me lies. I'll just hurt you so badly that you'll beg for death. But instead, just before I leave, I'll cut out your tongue so that you can't tell them anything about me. And then cut off your hands so you can't write. I'll tourniquet them with this tape, of course. I want you to have a long life of regret."
Urine dripped on the floor, and Ellie started sobbing. Gavrilla smoothed the tape back over her mouth.
"Did your mother ever say, 'I'll give you something to cry about'?"
She stabbed down hard and pinned Ellie's left hand to the chair. Ellie stopped sobbing and stared dully at the handle of the scalpel and the rivulet of blood. Gavrilla rocked the blade slightly and eased it out. The flow of blood increased, but she gently folded a Kleenex over it and taped it in place.
"Now, if I let you talk, will you just answer questions, not cry out?"
She nodded her head listlessly, and Gavrilla peeled back half the tape.
"They went to the airport."
"They? Her and her black friend?"
"Yes. They're going back to Texas, to Houston."
"Oh, that's a lie."
She positioned the scalpel over the back of Ellie's other hand and raised her fist like a hammer.
"Panama,"
she said in a hoarse shout.
"Portobello. Don't, please don't."
"Flight number?"
"I don't know. I heard him writing it down."
She pointed with her head.
"Over by the phone there."
She walked over and picked up a piece of paper.
"Aeromexico, 249. I guess they were in such a hurry they left it."
"They were in a hurry."
Gavrilla nodded.
"I suppose I should be, too."
She came back and looked at her victim thoughtfully.
"I won't do all those terrible things to you, even though you lied."
She smoothed the tape over Ellie's mouth and took another small piece and pinched her nose shut with it. Ellie began kicking wildly and jerking her head back and forth, but Gavrilla managed to make a couple of tight turns of tape around her head, fixing the 2 small pieces in place and cutting off any possibility of air. In her struggles, Ellie tipped the chair over. Gavrilla brought her back upright with an effortless lift, as Julian had done with her a couple of hours earlier. Then she dressed slowly, watching the pagan's eyes as she died. There was a message waiting for us in my BOQ office, flashing on the console screen. that Gavrila had overcome her guard and escaped.